This is the John Clayton Show.
Brought to you by Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's get you going with some headlines. Well, Mariners had another dud last night, 10-7. At least they scored some runs, something they've not been doing. But if you look over the last seven games, they've been outscored 46-23. So Colorado getting the victory to open things up. They did make a bunch of roster moves yesterday. James Paxton going on a disabled list with a sore back. He'll be eligible to start coming back on July the 24th. So they'll continue the series tonight. It's going to be at 6:10 with a 5 o'clock pregame. Wade LeBlanc will be on the mound. Then he's going to be followed up tomorrow by Mike Leake. Then they go to the All-Star break. Good news on the All-Star front. Blake Snell from local area down with the Tampa Bay team is now back on the All-Star team. He's back, finally voted in, had the best earned run average in baseball. So he should have made it anyways, but now at least he makes it. That's the positive thing. Just news breaking right now. Looks like Jabari Parker, who had his tender taken away from the Milwaukee Bucks, he ends up going to the Chicago Bulls for 2 years, $40 million. That's a big loss for the Bucks, and we'll see how that hurts their chances next year. In other news, DeMarco Murray makes his surprise announcement that he's going to retire. Back to baseball, the Angels lose to the Dodgers last night, 3-2. The A's lose to San Francisco, 7-1. So with that in mind, the A's remain 5 games in back of the Mariners, and it's 10 games back for the Angels, and those are our headlines. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Joining us right now is Dave Grosby. And Dave, how are you on this gorgeous, hot Saturday?
Yeah, it's beautiful, John. Beautiful outside. Summer's finally here, my friend.
It's official. I guess it's going to stay that way for a while. I don't want to jinx it, but it looks like it's going to, you know.
Well, we always get a couple of good weeks out of the year, don't we?
Mm-hmm. No, that's true. But no, I think
that's
great.
Yeah, it'll be nice. You're not going to jinx it.
That's good. So this is a tough stretch for the Mariners. I mean, now they're starting to lose guys. Again, not seriously, but two back injuries to, you know, their number one, number two starting pitcher, even though Hernandez has not been playing like a number one, number two pitcher. But, you know, back injuries and, you know, spells where they can't hit. Pitching's now starting to fall apart. It's like they can't wait to get to the All-Star game and get a break.
I agree, and it's something that happens to every team. I mean, no team wins on – I mean, it's the football mentality, John, for people to push the panic button, and then it's coupled with the fact that this team has so often disappointed that there's no understanding of how the thing works. Now, look, the Mariners may collapse in the second half of the season. That's entirely possible. So may any number of other teams, and other teams may drive. But, you know, what has basically happened, I like to sometimes for reference sake, you know, just say that you can, if you break the season into 10 game spots, it's like a football season. So 10 games times 16 is 160. You play 162 games. Mariners lost 6 of their last 9 games. They're 3-6. So it's basically the equivalent of losing one game in the NFL. It's not necessary. Now, you're right about some of the trends that are disturbing, which is the minor injuries, but that's also something that happens during the course of a season. I don't read a whole lot into this except, like you said, they need the All-Star break to happen soon. I mean, the Rockies are a difficult matchup like any good National League team is going to be for them because they can't play Nelson Cruz and for American League teams, it's always a disadvantage, but I don't see this being anything more than just a blip on the radar. They're still at a pace. Look, John, I never expected them to play 700 ball all year. They're at a pace where if they just go 500 the rest of the way, which is 34-33, they win 92 games. That's a terrific season, and that'll get them in the postseason. So it's just a little hiccup on the way to the All-Star break, but the All-Star break can't arrive soon enough.
Oh, no question. Now, and of course, you go into this particular three-game set on the road in a National League park, and you don't have Nelson Cruz in the lineup because, you know, he's only going to be DHing, and there's no DH, and that's going to cost you.
Of course it is, and they also happen to be hot at this point in time, so that's another factor. But you're always, any American League team's always at a significant disadvantage in a National League ballpark, and the Mariners have the misfortune of playing a team that is hot right now, you know, instead of the Padres or any number of other teams in the league. So we'll see what happens today with Wade LeBlanc, who's pitched very well and has pitched for many years in the National League and has been the Mariners' most consistent starter, believe it or not. For most of the year, and then Mike Leake goes to the finale. You get one of the games, you're fine. Even if you don't, it's time for the break, time to reload a little bit, and then you got the second half coming with the guarantee of a few things, and that is you're adding one of the best left-handed bats in the game to your roster in the middle of August. So the sky is not falling for the Mariners.
No, I agree, and that's why they've taken care of business. That's something that you look back in the last couple of years they didn't do. They didn't take advantage of the bad teams. They struggled sometimes to beat teams with losing records, and they've done such a great job of winning the games with losing records, and you know also playing respectable against the winning teams. I mean, getting 5 out of 7 from the Cleveland Indians. You know, doing well against the Angels, doing well against the A's. You know, certainly they struggled against the Jets. And or in the struggle against the Red Sox and the Yankees, and so that's okay. But then they come back and they make it up and they win 6 in a row against the 2 worst teams in baseball, Baltimore and Kansas City. And of course, what happens after the All-Star break is that they get Chicago, and they'll probably need a good 3-game sweep against them.
Yeah, one of the worst teams in baseball, if not the worst team in baseball. So we'll see. We'll see what goes. It's going to be an exciting second half of the season. As you mentioned, the A's came back down to earth a little bit last night. The Giants whacked them. I don't see their run continuing, although very impressive to get to this point at 10 over 500. I mean, you know, one of the storylines of the American League this year is the American League West is really far and away the best division. I mean, you got 2 good teams in the East. You've got 1 good team in the Central, and you got 3 good teams in the West, which has been kind of surprising. And the A's have been a big surprise with their midseason move, but it's just that, a midseason move. There's still plenty of games to play. And from the Mariners' standpoint, the other point to make is besides just adding Cano, they're going to add other players. There's no question about that. Jerry Dipoto will make some moves, and they will have new arms. They'll have some fresh arms in there. But they're also going to get some guys back from injury, like Dan Altavilla, for example, in the bullpen, is someone who hadn't been thought of a whole lot who will be back. We'll see what develops. But this is nothing – in my view, this is nothing but just a hiccup on the road. And like I said, losing 6 out of 9 is not the worst thing in the world.
Nope, I could agree with that. So, but we'll see, just to get through these next 2 games. Again, I think if they can just get 1 win, that's satisfactory. That would still put them, 21 games above 500. And then see if the A's start to cool off, and, you know, they lost last night. But what you don't want to have is the A's start to get it down to 3 games. They have it at 5 right now, but you don't want to get it as close as 3.
Well, but the other thing is, you know, you've got I think 10 games left against the A's, so you're in a power situation with them. I mean, the Angels I don't consider much of a threat anymore. You've got and the games left with them are on the road, but you've got like 7 or 8 left with them. So you've got a chance to control your own destiny for a great deal of the season. In fact, you know, I mean, you talked about 3 games. If you just maintain better than a 3-game advantage, you got a chance to finish off the last series of the year. Mariners play 3 against the A's, then 3 against the Texas Rangers, who are a disaster at this point. So looking way, way ahead, you got plenty of opportunities in the division. It's a lot more difficult if you're playing a wild card game with the teams in other divisions, because you don't tend to play them. And you don't have as much control. But as long as it's the A's that the Mariners are competing with, they've beaten them 6 out of 9 so far, and they control that destiny. So it's a good situation the Mariners are in, certainly, and a tremendous first half of the season.
Oh, no question. And the one that surprised everybody, nobody thought they'd be on pace for a 92-win season. Again, I think what we were both, I was in that 84 to 78 range, and when the season started, we're both, I think, both leaning toward the 78.
Right, and I mean, you know, this has happened with Robinson Cano missing a huge part of the season with his suspension. It's happened with Felix Hernandez being your number 5 starter. I mean, you can say he's been inconsistent, this, that, and the other thing. You're deep enough into the season now where you can take the aggregate, you can take the results you've seen, and Felix Hernandez is a pitcher with a 5-plus ERA at this point. I mean, if his name's not Felix, he's a guy that they very well might have changed out. And in fact, if they add a significant starter, if they are able to do something like that, he's the guy who I think comes out. So to have the great record they've had without Cano and without Felix Hernandez, 2 guys that you thought of as being very important at the start, just goes to show the vagaries of baseball, John. It's a very hard sport to predict. It really is.
Oh, yeah, no question about that. So and are you looking forward to the All-Star game on Tuesday?
You know, kind of. I mean, you know, the All-Star game, I'll say this for it. In of all the All-Star games, it's the one that's usually the best, in my opinion, because, you know, you don't have to change the game. I mean, the NFL, the Pro Bowl is a joke, obviously, and they changed the rules significantly for it. NHL, the same sort of thing. The NBA is ridiculous. I mean, it's just a layup contest. But baseball, you know, you really can't, you know, you don't see, you're not going to see guys who throw at 100 throw it at 90, you know, or pitch underhand or anything like that. I mean, the game is still the same. It usually, in my opinion, is the best of them. And, yeah, I'm kind of looking forward to seeing some of those pitchers in particular. You know, we see a little bit of the National League, but not a lot of the National League. Looking forward to seeing some of those guys like Josh Hader of Milwaukee, who I haven't seen in person. John, he's hit 106 on the radar gun this year.
Wow.
106, for crying out loud. So I'm looking forward to seeing him. And I do like the All-Star game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's going to be it moves fast because it's so pitcher dominated. Because you can only the pitchers come out there and they do one maybe two innings at the most, and you got good heat, you got relievers now, which really years ago they didn't just do that. It was all just starting pitchers coming in there, but now you have the option to have three relievers on your roster.
Well, they have more than that even, John, and you're right. It didn't used to be that way at all. I mean, you and I can remember the old days where starters would go five or six innings, and they play it like a regular game, and you'd also you often have position players play the entire game. Now they make a serious effort to get everyone into the game, which is okay. You know, it's an exhibition. It is what it's supposed to be. I would think that the one thing they could do if they're worried about anything is that things that they're experimenting with, things that they're talking about experimenting with, the All-Star game is a pretty good place to do it in front of a big crowd. So if you're like, for example, if it goes into extra innings and you're still contemplating that weird rule of starting with a guy on second base, you do it. You know, do it in the All-Star game. You know, try different things in the All-Star game. It's something you can get away with. But as of right now, I still think it's the best of the All-Star games.
No question. How happy were you with the Gene Segura story, being able to get in with the fan support?
Terrific. And it was a great fan exercise. And you know, it was really good. I mean, he wound up getting 13 and a half million votes. So there were a lot of other people who thought he was an all-star. And look, I mean, he was. He deserved it. He did not deserve to go in as a starter. He didn't get screwed, in my opinion. I'm not going to take him over Francisco Lindor. I'm not going to take him over Manny Machado. So he did not deserve to be in there in front of those two guys. But, you know, if you're looking at the next best player who didn't get in, they had a great case for him. And I heard you say already Blake Snell got in. Also, Charlie Morton of Houston is a guy who got in as well. It's been an amazing year for pitching in the American League. But the Segura thing was great. I really credit the Mariners marketing department, which is an old song with me. I mean, I think they're the best in the business and have been for over a decade now, and they just illustrated it. They got all the players to buy in, too, which is another reason why I don't view this Mariner slump as anything more than a hiccup. This is a team that has really taken advantage of team chemistry. It's a team that feels very tight together. You don't sense them getting down. I mean, we've seen teams in the past get down after long road trips or after long losing streaks and just not have the impetus to rally. And it doesn't look that way at all with this group. This seems to be a really tight team. I think it was, I'm not going to call it a team building exercise, but to get all the players behind this move too, it's just one of the positive things. So it was nothing but positive, I thought.
Okay, so now what's on the positive schedule for you today?
Just enjoying this beautiful day, brother. I mean, I don't know what else to do but just getting outside and enjoying the sun.
Yeah, well, enjoy it, and of course, just enjoy being with you.
And then the World Cup tomorrow, John. I'm going to do what a billion people around the world are doing.
Okay, yeah.
I'm going to watch the World Cup.
Well, there you go. Enjoy, and we'll talk to you on Monday.
Okay, bud.
Okay, that's Dave Grosby, Bob Gros, and Tom every weekday from 12 into 3 here on 710 ESPN Seattle. Give us a call, 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Load up the phones. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com. Now, more John Clayton.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Give us a call. Let's go to Dre. Dre, how are you?
Oh, always a pleasure, John. I'm doing great. Yeah, I'm trying to hit on a few things. You know me, the TO thing. I really got mixed feelings because I know that the writers didn't do their job to a certain extent to where they broke, being objective, they broke a lot of things.
Now, remember, I'm one of those voters.
like you said, the last two, but not the first.
The first one, you didn't. No, the first one I took into account the things that he did in the locker room, the things that he did to his quarterback, and the things that he did that was not a good teammate. And, you know, again, the two teams that he was in his prime couldn't wait to get rid of him and did get rid of him.
Yep.
And so that's a factor.
Yeah, but you can't. But I still think that's. I'm pretty sure there's a lot of players in the Hall of Fame right now that's done the same thing that was first ballot. I'm pretty sure of that, and you can't put that into consideration. Because once you are like to a certain extent of a Jimmy Olsen, you have to stay objective. And I think they broke the rules by not being objective anymore. And you told me personally that they had a personal vendetta against him. And because you have a personal vendetta against him, you being a person of journalism, that breaks the rules, period. And so because of that, you put him in position to do something like this, and I think there might be one more person that might follow him doing this. And it's going to be down the road if he plays this year and next year, and I wouldn't be surprised if a guy like Marshawn Lynch does the same thing, doing in his hometown of East Oakland, in front, have a podium right in front of his high school at Oak Tech and doing the same thing. Because you're putting himself in that kind of position. Not saying that Marshawn Lynch is the first ballot Hall of Fame. I'm not saying that. But I'm saying he might be doing something too similar to something like this. But I think it was wrong for them to do that. And as far, and let me just go another thing. As far as the collusion of Colin Kaepernick, you don't think there's collusion. I think there is everything but collusion when it comes to Kaepernick, when it comes to Eric Reed. You know, and I know that a lot of these owners are on the same side as guys that as occupying political office right now in the White House. You know that. And now that if politics has come into the NFL and it's affecting the NFL, and the thing is that no owner, you said owners, I can't believe that all the owners can come together and just do this on one particular person. Yes, because they don't want this person that's in the White House to have one of these rallies like you just saw in Montana and say, I'm disappointed in such and such, such. And he's not going to say it in that kind of way. He's going to say it in a different kind of wording and going to say, I'm disappointed that owner who hired Colin Kaepernick, and I'm very disappointed. They don't want that to happen. Some of these owners have contributed to his presidential campaign, like that one in Houston. We all know Mr. McNair, who wanted to recant his apology on what he said already. So that is a problem. When you have politics entering the NFL, is definitely a problem, John. And nobody wants to talk about that elephant in the room. Well, it's an elephant in the room, John, and it's affecting a lot when it comes to the NFL right now. It's affecting Colin Kaepernick of getting a job. Yeah, you could talk about his record when he was with the San Francisco 49ers towards the end, those last 2 or 3 years, and not so that. But you can look at his numbers that last year he played for the 49ers. It has nothing to do with him regressing and this and that. You know it's collusion. I'm not saying you're not saying it's collusion, but it's obviously everything but collusion.
Well, see, but here's
what I'm saying.
Okay, would you agree with this? If you go into each year, how many teams are looking for quarterbacks? I'm not saying that they have necessarily good quarterbacks, but if let's say you're Jacksonville and you've drafted Blake Bortles, okay, you're going to stick with him through pretty much the 4 years or 5 years of his contract, depending if you have the fifth year option or not. All right, so you knew this was an unusual year because there was 8 teams that were looking for quarterbacks. Okay, so for example, even though that you could say that Seattle didn't need a quarterback, did they not talk to Colin Kaepernick? Did they not have him come in? Was Green Bay going to do anything with Colin Kaepernick? So what you're talking about, if it's a collusion, it's a collusion of at the most 6 to 8 teams. That's it, because everybody else has their quarterback.
But what about last? We're talking about last year also. We're talking about all of a sudden everything's turned on against him. Said, "Oh well, he's not sure if he's gonna, sit or this and that." And this, it's a disappointing guy because he was about to fly into the, the VMAC, and all of a sudden he wasn't sure. And it's like everything's turned on him. Everything is turned on him. I heard Dave Wyman say that he doesn't believe in collusion also. But this is the same Dave Wyman when he was that time. Remember that Crabtree to lead fight in Oakland? Remember that? About 19 minutes after you got off the air, John, it's the same Dave Wyman who said they should start tasing players and hosing them down. So that's his perspective. Just remember what he just said. Hosing players down and tasing them. That's what they should start doing. So, you can leave that at that, but still, I think it's collusion because there's no way in the world that all these smoked out reject quarterbacks from off the street that they were picking last year and put them as backup quarterback. Even Austin Davis, come on, man. Even Austin, you tell me that Austin Davis is a better backup than Colin Kaepernick? There's no way. And all the quarterbacks last year, it was just an embarrassment. And there's no, once again, politics has entered the NFL, and nobody really wants to address it because you saw how scared there was a no vote. They said they voted on the national at the last owners' meeting, and all of a sudden they said they're really.
Well, here's where I agree with you, Dre. Dre, the one thing is take the politics out of it. Have the players all stay in the locker room like they did before 2010. Then you eliminate the problem. Simple. It's a simple solution. Yet the owners are not being simply thinking about it. Crazy.
That's true, but it's also putting that we put it in the locker room and not addressing the issues that's really, really going on. Mm-hmm. That's going on in this country right now. Also, John, you just want to just put it in the locker room, not address exactly what's going on. Well, it's out in the open now, and it's real. And what's going on is real every day, John. And And it's just like real that the Seattle Mariners right now were sitting on a lead, and now the lead is starting to slip. And when you start sitting on a lead and marinating and get complacent, and you all of a sudden your offense goes to a stagnant spiel, this is what happens. I think Jerry DePoto is going to be talking to some owners during the All-Star break and start making some moves, because this team right now is in a kilter, and all of a sudden it's slipping and it's going down quick. And you don't want to start going down like Leonardo Cappuccino in the Titanic.
Okay. Hey, Dre, thank you for the phone call, as always.
It's a pleasure. Thanks, John.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. We'll come back, talk to Bill and others. Give us a call. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, more John Clayton on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Bill in Gig Harbor. Hey, Bill.
Hi, John. Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay, you're coming through a little faint. I'm calling about the Mariners. Baltimore, you know, looks to be in a selling mode, trying to go to a younger team. Would you consider trying to trade for Adam Jones? I think he's 32. He's been an all-star. Heredia is a good defensive player. I'd keep him on the team as a reserve, but we need somebody that can both field and run and hit. Yeah, I don't know what it'd take to get him.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, and a lot of these trades are going to be a little bit giveaways. We watched that last year with Justin Verlander. But one of the problems is that I think the resources probably need to be more on the pitching staff than it is on the field. And I know I say that, you know, seeing the wear and tear of going without Robinson Cano's bat. I mean, now where it was 0.4 on a difference on the runs per game, 0.4, now it's up to 0.5. And you can see some guys starting to wear down a little bit, start to, you know, fatigue starting to get in there. And, you know, even in the case of like D. Gordon and Ryan Healy, they've been great as far as acquisitions, but they're not getting on the base as much. Just getting that number three hitter, I think, would spark things up and then maybe get it back to the 4.6 runs per game that they were before. But, to you know, they have limited resources right now. Because, I mean, you look at the minor league system, they have now had to shut down two of their top pitching prospects, and most teams want pitching, you know, because Gilbert has mono, so he can't be out there. You know, Sam Carlson ended up having a Tommy John surgery. So when you start to look, and, you know, I believe it or not, I have my databases, you know, and my databases, you know, go over and look at all the ratings on guys and that, you know, the only number tier one prospect they have is, you know, right now, their top pick, I mean, you know, Kyle Lewis, that's it. Everything else is two. And so if you take away the two pitchers, you're probably now down to seven total first number one tier and number two tier prospects. And, you know, unless it's a little bit of a giveaway, I don't think they have the ammunition to get a good player like Adam Jones. And they've got to invest to get one or two more starters to kind of give their in a bullpen to try to at least get the pitching staff through the next month and a half, 2 months.
You mentioned three players who I wanted to talk about, too. Speaking of Gordon and Cano, I really like Gordon at second. I played semi-pro ball in Colorado and played second base, and I'm familiar with the position. But I think Gordon is, number one, quicker, and number two, I think he's more aggressive, both, of course, on the base pass, but even defensively. He gives it his go all the time. Sometimes Cano, I know he's older, doesn't run hard on the ground ball or run everything out. And Healy, you know, is real streaky. When he's good, he's really good. And when he's bad, he's pretty bad. So I would probably keep Gordon at second and then play platoon Cano and Healy at first, or start Cano if he can play first, and then use Healy as a pinch hitter or a designated hitter on when they play National League teams.
Mm-hmm. Well, see, it's funny because I've kind of done a flip-flop, and because I was kind of going down your logic, because I think that they are better with D. Gordon at second base as far as fielding, and you know he's a good energizer, but I think you can pretty well accept that even though it's not going to change things this year, Cano's so valuable. Because I was even thinking, okay, is there a way to trade him and get rid of the contract? And you can see the answer is no. I mean, that's the contract's $24 million. I mean, you can look and see, you know, all the metrics of, you know, the guys like Albert Pujols, you know, as his contract's worn down. I mean, he's now he's not even considered to be an all-star level player. And so they've paid that now through 2021 at $24 million a year. So you just accept that. And so what's the better way? Yeah, of course, and a better chance to be able to pick up an outfielder like they did, and particularly in some of the trades over the last couple of years. But, you know, they're still better with a full-time spot in the hitting order for Robinson Cano, and I still think that they're better if they can get something done with Nelson Cruz, because I look at it the same way as like Adrian Beltre, and you know, they can still get a 2-year deal out of him, and you know, Beltre still, I mean, he's now right now, but I don't see the wearing of Cruz, and so if you can get Cruz out there, I think they're in pretty good shape. So I think that, you know, the money probably has to go to Cruz at about $16 million. Maybe $15 million on a 2-year deal, get, you know, $30 million, and then you know, that's, and then put Gordon, unfortunately, back out in center field.
Well, I like the idea of re-signing Cruz, and I like the idea of Cano coming back. You know, we all make mistakes, and I think he's learned from his. I think he'll give it his all when he comes back. So it'll be interesting, but he does need to be in the lineup. If not full-time, you know, maybe 80% of the time because of his age and, you know, the wear and tear on his body. But it's going to be an interesting break here for the All-Star. DePoto should probably make a couple trades. But I agree with the need for one or two pitchers, you know, a starter, a reliever, and if they could pull off something for an outfielder, I would like to see Jones come back. Mm-hmm. That was a bad trade in the first place, so worst one they've ever made.
Yeah, that was a bad one, no doubt. Hey, great call, Bill. Thank you.
Yeah, bye.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Irish Mankey. Irish Mankey, how are you?
Hello, Mr. Clayton. Beautiful, beautiful day today, and I hope you and Mrs. Clayton have a wonderful day.
We will try.
Well, and is there any kind of personal training going on with you today, Mr. Clayton?
I'm hoping to get something, but I can't guarantee it.
You just can't, at noon, put everything down and run out the door?
No, got responsibilities, so...
Well, I know, but you've got all afternoon for that, Mr. Clayton.
Mm-hmm. We've got to figure something
anyway,
out.
All right. So, Mr. Clayton, 4 weeks, 4 Saturdays, till mm-hmm. college football...
is around the corner.
Oh, it's here, Mr. Clayton, it's here. No doubt about it. And Huskies and Notre Dame rankings. Notre Dame is 9, Huskies 7 in Sporting News. Mm-hmm. ESPN, Notre Dame is 12, Washington is 6. Athlon has Notre Dame 14, Washington 12. Mr. Clayton, the seasons will be clearly defined on that first game when the Irish take on Michigan and the Huskies take on Auburn.
That's correct.
I think the Irish win and the Huskies lose, Mr. Clayton.
Well, I can't guarantee. Michigan's pretty good, and they've got a quarterback now. So
they are. No doubt about it. That's what makes it so exciting, Mr. Clayton.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to the two most highly winning programs in in NCAA football history, square off against each other again, Mr. Clayton.
That should be fun. No
it's
doubt.
Beautiful. It's beautiful. Now, Mr. Clayton, I was scanning through some of these things, you know, Sporting News, ESPN, Athlon, and I ran across a prediction, I think it was on Sporting News, that said the Huskies' weakness is they don't have receivers.
That's correct. That's one of their, that and defensive ends, pass rushing defensive ends. That's one of the problems.
Well, that kind of puts you in a tough spot, doesn't it? Makes you one-dimensional. Is the running game that good that they don't need to pass the ball?
Well, they are going to pass the ball. I mean, remember, this is college football. You pass the ball as much as you can. I mean, when you start to lose as many good receivers as they have to the draft, I mean, that's going to be one of the expected things. But somebody just has to step up. I mean, they've got a – I know he's coming off an injury, but they got, you know, one of the better young tight ends in the country, and he's going to be involved in it. I mean, they'll find a way to scheme things up. Remember, it's like – everybody recognizes that wide receiver and defensive end are question marks. But what did you just recite? Every single publication, every single rating service has the Huskies over Notre Dame.
Well, I know, but
you just admit, you just read
that's
that.
That's only going to last. That's preseason, Mr. Clayton.
Well,
and after that first game, I guarantee you the Irish will win over Michigan. And even if the Huskies squeak by Auburn, I think they're going to be right tired where they should be.
But what if they lose?
They won't lose, Mr. Clayton.
It's
at home, and they all know how good this game is for them.
Okay, well, don't be overconfident here. Remember, this is Notre Dame, and they still need to be in the conference.
Greatest college football team ever.
Well, let's put it this way. They are the greatest outside of a conference.
No, they don't need. That's what defines their greatness. You keep falling back on conference. Oh, by conference now. By the way, I think it was in Sporting News again. They mentioned that the conference is in order, and the Pac-12 was 12th.
Mm-hmm.
Number four. And the Irish Conference, ACC, was 3.
Well, so but they're not.
Irish
but they're not in the ACC.
Then the Huskies.
Well, let's see how that goes. Irish got to run.
Mr. Clayton,
thank
Irish.
877-969 ESPN 206-421 ESPN. The John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Patrick in Kent. Hey, Patrick.
Hey, John. Good morning.
Good morning.
A few weeks ago, you mentioned about the Seahawks defense. The goal for sacks is 40. How did you come up with that number?
It was funny because what I did, because I know that Dave Wyman took 39, and I think I didn't have, because I think that they can get to 40. And the reason is if you go through the history of this team with Pete Carroll, it averages 39. Okay, so how I came up with the number was that I think they're going to blitz more. I know that's something that both K.J. Wright and Bobby Wagner are campaigning for. And remember, they got the linebacker coach now as Ken Norton Jr., who is now the coordinator. And, you know, I think there might be a little bit more blitzing. So you come up, and let's say you can get 12 from Frank Clark. Okay, let's say that you can get 6 to 8 from Deion Jordan. I think that maybe, you know, the combination of Barkevious Mingo, Rasheen Green, and all that, you know, that can get you probably, you know, combined to 10. And so if that gets you to, like, you know, 30, they can make up the difference with some sacks off of blitzes. I mean, if you go back to, you know, 2013, I think just off the top of my head, they had 13. That was, of course, the best defense they've had. They had 13 sacks off of blitzes. And, you know, they had 10, I think, back in 2016. They just didn't have many last year. And the reason is they didn't have the lead in the fourth quarter for the most part. They were trailing. And so now if they can get, that's why the running game is going to be the difference maker in getting them an opportunity to get more sacks, because if they can have more leads, you can get more sacks. And that's where I kind of came up that they can do it. But I think they can make it up, because, you know, we all have maybe the impression, and rightfully so, that Pete Carroll's not a guy that wants to really go ahead and blitz a lot. But, you know, particularly on some passing downs, and you can see, like, for example, Justin Coleman, he had 2 sacks off of blitzes last year. Bobby Wagner, you know, he can have as many as 5. So I think when you juggle it around, that's how I got to 40.
Okay, how about on offense with Rashard Penny? How many yards he should have in his rookie season?
I'd say, if you look at Pro Football Focus and some fantasy people, they have him gaining like 970 yards. But see, I still think that Chris Carson is going to be the starter. So if they can get, because you look at the Alvin Kamara and Mark Ingram roles that they had. I don't see this team, because again, that's almost too much to ask to go from hardly nothing, where you didn't have even 1,000 yards from your running backs last year, to get to, you just didn't have that. So what they can do is that I think if they can get 850 to 950 out of Carson or make the switch, maybe it's going to be Rashard Penny, and they get about maybe 400 to 500. The other backs are going to get in there, and then you're going to get maybe about 300 to 400 from Russell Wilson. You combine all that, get to 2,000, and if you can get to 2,000 yards rushing, there were 1,600 and some last year. If you can get that extra 320, 340 yards, that can get your point differential from like the 14 and 34 of the last 2 years back up to 100, and then you may start to have the ability to talk about 10-win seasons or 11 wins.
All right. Thank you, my friend, John.
Okay. Hey, thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to John in Seattle. Hey, John.
Hello, John. How are you this afternoon?
I'm doing great.
Good. So, in the past, you have been somewhat a skeptic of the San Diego Chargers. And, yes, I did say San Diego. I know they are no longer there, but I still refuse to believe that.
Okay.
Except for last season. Well, you're still a skeptic, but they really came on at the end of last season. I'm wondering what you see them doing this year.
Well, you'll like this because, again, it's year to year, right? And you judge it on what you see and what you evaluate. And so there's two things that tell me that if I'm picking the most improved team in football for both talent and everything else, it's all points to the Chargers. And here's where I say that. Oh, yeah. I mean, there's one number that it's golden. I know that Phil Steele follows it. I follow it. Close games. If you lose a lot of close games, you win more the next year. Like, for example, the Chargers, I think, were the worst team in football losing close games. And we all realize they won 9 out of their last 12 because they got the 0-4 start. So they were, among the so in a negative sense, last year they lost the close games. Then the next year you come back and win them. And then you look at the fact that, they usually hit on 2 or 3 starters in each of the last several drafts. And so I think this is their best team. This is their most talented team. And, from Joey Bosa to the defensive line and all that, I think that this is a team that's going to win the division in the AFC West.
Do you view them as being able to compete against the elite of the AFC?
Yes. Well, let's put it this way. Who's the elite in the AFC? There's two. There's Pittsburgh. There's New England. And I think you can make an argument for Jacksonville because they have 8 Pro Bowlers on defense, and they've got a running game in Leonard Fournette. So I'll give you maybe 3 elite teams in the AFC, but I can't find that 4th. Maybe that can be the Chargers, but let's put it this way. Can they compete? If there's only 3, absolutely.
Yeah.
They've got Phillip Rivers. They've got receivers. They've got a defense. I mean, there's some arguments if you look at some of the lists that are starting to come out that because if you just Google search the Chargers, I mean, you can see, hey, is this one of the most talented teams that nobody's talking about? And I'd say yes.
Yeah. How many good years do you think Phillip Rivers has left?
I'd say maybe 3 or 4.
Wow, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
I was expecting you to say 1 or 2.
No, because, he's got that type of body in that he can go to his 40, just like Tom.
Yeah, he's been remarkably resilient, and the line has done a decent enough job. And I think
I'm not sold on the offensive line yet. By the way, that's the one area that I'm concerned.
Yeah, I share that concern too. But the scheme seems to be that he gets rid of the ball pretty quick generally. So he's been able to withstand the creaky offensive line. It's not as bad as Seattle's offensive line. Poor Russell Wilson runs for his life every week.
Right. And that's why they've got to improve that, and they're trying to improve that with the scheme and fitting those players into that scheme. Hey, John, thank you for the phone call.
Thank you.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Vic in Seattle. Hey, Vic.
Hi, John. I've got a bit of a convoluted question that I'd really like to have your input on. I know that the league is trying to cut down on concussions and the head-first rule. But I've also noticed that, like, people like Cam Chancellor and Chris and Averill, they have lower neck injuries. Is there any correlation between keeping the head up and having lower neck injuries and shoulder injuries, kind of whiplash-style injuries? Is that on the rise?
That's one of the concerns I think that everybody has right now is that you want to try to, because they advise you just don't go lowering your head into something because it's too dangerous. And that's something I think that, you have to be wary of. But again, this is just, you get freak injuries. That happens with neck injuries. I don't think there's an increase in neck injuries, and players are more aware of, where they have to put their heads and all that stuff, because now with all the penalty rules and everything else. So that's just one of the challenges. But overall, I still think that, they're okay.
Oh, that's cool. Cause I just see a lot of whiplashes of their heads now more than I ever did before. So that was just a concern for me. Love the football. Love your take on stuff. Thank you so much.
Hey, thank you very much. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Coming up, chat baseball with Gary Hill from the Mariner Broadcast. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.